For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Staying on course, transforming your mental chatter. Our topic today is staying on course, transforming your mental chatter. In the past few weeks, we've talked about discovering what's important, charting our North Star, mapping our route to get to our North Star, identifying our obstacles, and last week we talked about how to stay on course by changing unproductive habitual tendencies. And one of a very specific unproductive habitual tendency is our mental chatter. So today we're going to talk about transforming our mental chatter. Chatter, according to Ethan Cross, consists of the cyclical negative thoughts and emotions that turn our singular capacity for introspection into a curse rather than a blessing. So rather than giving ourselves a pep talk, we've got all that negative stuff. So our chatter becomes a curse. It puts our performance, decision-making, relationships, happiness, and health in jeopardy. We think about that screw-up at work or misunderstanding with a loved one and end up flooded by how bad we feel. Then we think about it again and again. We introspect, hoping to tap into our inner coach, but we find our inner critic instead. The chatter that goes on in our mind consists of thoughts that are simply images and sound bites, but they're not necessarily reality. Scientists estimate we have 50 to 80,000 thoughts per day. That's 2 to 3,000 thoughts per hour. That's a lot of thoughts. And most of those thoughts are below the line. We've talked about thinking of your brain as a circle with a line across. Everything above the line, you're aware of. Everything below the line, you're not. Is there anyone in this room who can say they can't, are we aware of 2,000 thoughts in the last hour? No. 90% of our thoughts, give or take, might be 70, might be, 50 for some people, but a lot of our thoughts are unconscious. We don't even know they're going on. But every time we have a thought, we're strengthening the neural pathway of that thought. So if you've got a negative thought going on below the level of consciousness, it's getting stronger and stronger and stronger every time you think of it. And about 90% of our thoughts are repeats. So we got a lot of thoughts repeating over and over and over. And most of those thoughts are either rehashing the past, I coulda, shoulda, woulda, if this woulda happened, this shoulda happened. Thinking if we just keep thinking about it in different ways, we'll change the ending, but we can't change the ending in the past. Or a lot of our thoughts are stirring up anxiety about the future. If this happens, I'm going to do this, and then this, and then this, and all we know about the future is we can't predict it. So all the while planning is good, over-planning is not going to give us any more control over the future than we have with no planning at all. And so we want to just be aware of that. Another set of thoughts that happens to go on is, what does this person think of me? What are they going to think if I say this? What about this? We worry so much about what other people think about us that those thoughts are going on over and over. So if we look closely at our chatter, and you do look more closely at your chatter when you meditate, you might find that many of the thoughts are just figments of your imagination. Something you made up. Some of the chatter replaced the monologues of your parents or other influential people in your life. Other chatter comes from your inner critic, who's so worried that you're going to fail, it's constantly trying to fix us. I call my inner critic Billy after a boy who was mean to me in eighth grade. And the reason I do that is because then the credibility of what Billy says is just not there. Because Billy was a jerk in eighth grade, and if that's who's talking to me, I don't really have to listen to it. I don't have to believe it. And I got that idea of calling my inner critic by a name by Sharon Salzberg, a meditation teacher. She calls hers Lucy from Charlie Brown. And it's just a way to put a little bit more lightheartedness in it by giving it a name, and so you take it a little less seriously. Because calming your inner critic, which is really what transforming your mental chatter is all about, is really a hard thing to do. Because if you try to just resist those thoughts, push them away, push them down below the line, guess what happens? They're still there below the line, and they're still happening thousands of times a day. And you're still strengthening that neural pathway. So you want to just try and make it less credible or less power, give it less power over you. Because sometimes that chatter was helpful in the past, but it's not helpful anymore. But yet we keep saying it to ourselves over and over. Last time we talked about habits, and we talked about the reward value we think we get from a habit, which was a reward value we got once when we did that, but might not be a reward that we get today. So the same thing happens with our mental chatter, that it was helpful for us maybe when we were in school to learn to keep your mouth shut. And so now you are always telling yourself to shut up and wondering why you don't have any close friends. Because what you were doing in one situation doesn't work in another, or what you did as a child doesn't work as an adult. So we really have to pay attention to our mental chatter. Lori Gottlieb says, what's important to remember about the stories other people have about us, like our family, is that we didn't write them. These stories someone else told us, they're much more about the person telling the story than they are about us. Think about that. You have a story that you've been telling yourself that maybe, your house isn't clean enough. Well, maybe that story is telling about someone who said that to you, who's OCD and whose house has to be perfect. And it's not really talking about you. Because maybe your house is messy, but it's not outrageous, it's fine. And it might be cleaner than 90% of the people in the world. But yet you still beat yourself up because someone else told you a story and you started believing it. So most of the time our inner voice functions pretty well. But when we're stressed, or we're emotional because there's some high stakes, like something big is going on in our life, our inner voice can turn to chatter. So rather than listening to our inner nurturer, we're listening to our inner critic. And that chatter is rehashing the past. Well, you did this wrong before, you're going to screw it up again. Or it's worrying about the future. I don't know how this is going to turn out. Well, nobody knows how this is going to turn out. Or making up stories that, oh, she didn't say hi to me. She must not like me. She's mad at me. She thinks I'm, whatever. And we make up all these stories about people's reasons for doing things without simply listening to them and hearing what they really have to say and paying attention to what their story is, and not automatically adding our story on top of it. So we end up jumping from one negative story to the next. well, she's mad at me. That probably means that so-and-so's mad at me too, and I'm never going to have any friends because everybody's going to be mad at me, and I don't even know what I did. And we go on, and then we jump to another mistake we made. And yeah, I'm not smart enough, and yeah, I did this wrong, and we jump from one to another. And if we allow ourselves to get lost in that negative chatter, we can become pretty darn distressed. Life gets pretty hard when we're lost in that chatter. And the reason is our prefrontal cortex, the executive part of our brain, the decision-making part of our brain, stops working because we contract. Because we're so emotional, and our amygdala, the emotional part of our brain, takes over. And we don't make good decisions when we make decisions with our amygdala. We make impulsive, reactive decisions. And we jump on that hamster wheel of reactivity. We think, oh, she doesn't like me. And then we say some snippy comment because our feelings are hurt because she didn't say hello to us yesterday. And how does that help heal the relationship? It doesn't. It just sets it on a spiral, a downward spiral. So we want to make sure that before that wheel starts spinning around and around and around with all the negative things, I'm not good enough, nobody's gonna love me, I'm always gonna fail, all of these things that we're gonna say over and over and over, we gotta remember that each time we're spinning, we're strengthening that neural pathway and making it harder to let go of that thought or that story or that belief. And so we really want to be aware as soon as we can when a thought pops up in our mind. And that's what we practice when we meditate. You didn't think you were meditating to have thoughts pop up. You thought you were meditating to have no thoughts, right? That's not why we're meditating. We're meditating so we can be aware of thoughts popping up. And some people can do it automatically during the day, being mindful of what's going on, conscientiously doing that. But for me, I've been meditating over a decade. And last week, I kind of was able to be mindful throughout the day and stop and take little breaks. But I still need the meditation to keep me on that path. If I quit meditating, I know I'd turn back into a space cadet. Well, I'm kind of a space cadet anyway, but I'd turn even worse into a space cadet of what's going on. And so let's stop and do a reflection. So you may want to get into your meditative posture. It's up to you. You may choose to close your eyes or feel free to leave them open. And just think about a time when your mind was flitting from one story to the next. Your mind was just going 100 miles an hour. Just notice what some of those stories were. And as you're going through those, how did your body feel as your mind raced from one thought to the next? Did you feel open and expansive? Was it kind of tight and tension? Restless, maybe? What did you feel in your body as your thoughts were spinning? You might have found that when chatter takes over, you torment yourself. Anyone feel like you kind of beat up on yourself as soon as the chatter took over? You might have thought about how you screwed up, how you said the wrong thing, how you mistreated someone, and you end up feeling really bad about yourself when that mental chatter's going and going and going. And then you think about it again and again. And this negative thought tends to activate another negative thought. How many, when you thought about your mind spinning, went from one thought to another that really weren't related but were negative? Anybody have that experience? Seeing a few nods. So each negative thought triggers another negative thought. And it can go on, and then you're on that hamster wheel going around with all these negative thoughts coming up. And you're so busy running from one negative thought to the other that you forget that you could step back and see the bigger picture. You could step back and say, oh, she didn't say hello to me. Maybe she didn't even notice me. She might be in a totally different world. I wonder what's going on with her. Instead of saying, oh, she doesn't like me because of this, and so-and-so doesn't like me, and I did this wrong when I was 15 years old, and this happened when I was in college, and on and on and on, we can stop and say, you know what? Maybe the world doesn't revolve around me. Maybe I need to take a step back and say, what's going on with them? We talked about the stories that people told you might say more about them than they do about you. Maybe the fact that she didn't say hello to you is because something's going on with her. And maybe we could get curious about that instead of making up a story that has no basis in reality. So you get stuck on the hamster wheel of reactivity. Sometimes we even get paralyzed. When our minds are so negative, we get paralyzed because all this energy is going into negative story after negative story. We lose our energy and we feel like we can't do anything. Mark Coleman says, it's as if your brain is stuck in the wrong gear and the judgments are quietly whirring just below your perceptual threshold, gnawing away at you and draining precious mental resources. In this state of mind, it can be difficult to think clearly or make decisions. It can feel like your brain is frozen and you've lost the antifreeze. Your brain is frozen and you've lost the antifreeze. You just can't do anything. You can't figure it out. You can see the problems, but you can't go anywhere near solutions because you're lost the antifreeze. All you can see is the problems. And we tolerate this constant chatter in our mind. We're telling ourselves how horrible we are, how we eat too much, how we're fat, how we're lazy, how we'll never be able to meditate, how it's terrible because I didn't do my gratitude journal, I'm a terrible person. We go on and on and on with that mental chatter. And the more we hear it, the more we start believing those ruminations, those judgments, and those worries. We start thinking those worries, what we're worried about, is an accurate representation of what's really going to happen. And it's not necessarily. We don't know what's going to happen in 18 months, or in 6 months, or even in 5 minutes. But we start saying, well, this is what's going to happen, and I'm worried about it. And then we kind of self-sabotage, so often it does end up happening because we're paralyzed, so we don't take the actions we need to take in the present moment because we're too busy with our mental chatter. So the mental chatter is really just thought bubbles, and you can pop those bubbles. You can just watch those bubbles go by, and they'll pop eventually. They're just figments of your imagination. And we've talked in the past about our storytelling mind and how we have to take the story and tease out the facts from the fiction. Because we add a lot of fiction in our stories that's not really true. And if we can look at here's the fact and here's the fiction, we can see what's true and what really isn't true. What did we make up? And we want to do that because all of that negative chatter, it hogs our neural capacity. We only have so much capacity in our brains. And our attention narrows to the thoughts that cause us the most distress. We use our brain to listen to our inner critic instead of our inner nurturer, instead of solving the problem or doing what we want to do. How many of you have ever been really upset and you tried to read a book to distract yourself? And when you're reading the book, you finish the page and you have no idea what it said. Not a clue. Because the negative thoughts are hogging our neural capacity. And until we can quiet those negative thoughts down, we're not going to remember what we read. Or we're not going to be able to see what's going on in the present moment. Our chatter kind of divides and it blurs our attention. So we need to turn the volume down on our chatter so we can see things as they are and really be more in the present moment. So the question is that 50% or 70%, who knows what percent of our thoughts are unconscious. And many of those are negative, so they do hurt us. So the question is, how do you get to know what those are so you can stop them? And the short answer is meditation. Because when you meditate, you become aware of thoughts that are popping up. And as those thoughts pop up, you become more aware of the thoughts that you're having. So we're training our brain to become aware of when we're thinking versus when we're not thinking. And as we see the thoughts pop up, that line starts to move down and we become aware of more and more of it. So that's part of it. The other part would be a meditation technique called open awareness. And that's where when you're meditating, you're just sitting down and watching what happens in your brain. And it's a difficult one because it's real easy to get caught up and start ruminating or start getting anxious about the future instead of doing open awareness. I still struggle with that. But you're just saying what thoughts are popping up and you're kind of like watching your thoughts like clouds going across the sky. This thought came up, then that thought came up. And as you get to know the thoughts, because you've seen them in your meditation, you'll start recognizing them in real life. And with each thought, often comes a bodily sensation. So another way to get at some of those negative thoughts that you're not aware of is to pay attention to your body. When you start tightening, tensing up, getting restless, you know there's a thought there. When you're getting restless, there's probably a thought there that you don't want to deal with in your meditation. If you're falling asleep in your meditation, you're either very tired or there's a thought you don't want to deal with. And so your body just shuts down. So listening to your body helps you, is a bell of mindfulness that, hey, here's a thought you should be paying attention to. And then you can start seeing more and more of what those thoughts are. About it, you see that a lot of the thoughts you had really construct what your identity is. The thoughts I had about, oh, I'm supposed to get all A's, constructed the identity that I created, that I was a know-it-all and a do-it-all, and that I could never know enough or do enough, and I had to know everything and do everything. And it had a big impact on how I lived my life. And so the narrative that you have is really very important. And so we want to use our mindfulness practice to help understand and see our mental chatter. And there's two ways that mindfulness practice really helps us. The first is to just become aware of that constant torrent of thoughts that cascade through our mind. You know, some of the thoughts that cascade through my mind, I wasn't aware of them for like 50 years, but they were still going on through my mind over and over again. You know, I told the story of in seventh grade getting dropped by my best friend, and the narrative going on underneath was, don't get close to people, they'll reject you. And that influenced a lot of my life. But finally, when I started meditating and slowing down and starting to see some of those stories, I realized that, you know, that story was going on, and some of it was fact. She did tell me I didn't fit in the group anymore, but some of it was fiction that I made up. There's a fatal flaw in me, and if anyone sees it, they're not going to like me. That was just something I made up, and we all make those things up. So we have to become aware of the thoughts. What's going on right now? What am I seeing? What am I feeling? What am I sensing? And what is fact? And what is my perception? Or what's the story I'm adding on to it? Because the story I'm adding on to that mental chatter is usually what hurts us. Typically, we add, there's something wrong with me, or there's something wrong with you, or something's broken, or, you know, I'm not lovable, whatever it might be. So the first one is just becoming aware, and that's how mindfulness practice helps. And I can't stress how important meditation is in helping you raise that awareness. The second one is we need to extricate ourselves from the stories. We can't just resist the story and say, oh, just don't think about it, because I did that for 50 years. Just keep it under the carpet and it won't bother you. But it's under that line, and that mental story is playing over and over, getting stronger and stronger, and I don't even know it. So we have to learn how to extricate ourselves. Now, one of the ways I did it was naming my inner critic Billy, and then I could start hearing, oh, that's just Billy talking again. And I tell you, I was thinking about this as I was preparing for today. Billy is a lot quieter in the last year than he was ever before in my life. I've really turned his volume down. And so I did it partly by naming him and taking some power away from him, but partly by following some of these other ways to control your chatter that Ethan Cross recommends. And one of them is distant self-talk. So when I'm talking to myself, I talk to myself in second person, because that helps me to step back and see. So I say, oh, Glor, this really wasn't so bad, or you did this, and it feels more like I'm talking to a friend than talking to myself. When I talk to myself, I have more of a tendency to beat myself up. But if I distance myself, it helps me take that one step back so I can see the bigger picture. And research has shown that referring to yourself in second person makes you less likely to ruminate and generate negative emotions, and more likely to improve performance under stress and think more skillfully. So I know it's worked for me, but there's been a lot of research on it that Ethan Cross has done that's found that. So a very similar one to that is just imagine you're advising a friend instead of advising yourself, because we give much more better advice to our friends than we give to ourselves. Broaden your perspective. I will say to myself, yeah, this really sucks. This is really hard. But you know what? You've gone through hard things before. You can do this. If I broaden my perspective and say, yeah, I've done this. And when I'm in the prison, I will tell them, you've done a lot of hard things. You can do this too. You've done harder things than I've done. You can do this too. If we broaden the perspective and realize all of us have dealt with adversity, so we can do it again and again, because life's always going to be throwing curveballs at us. And the more we can remember, yeah, I had problems before and I overcame them, the more likely we are to look at a problem as a challenge instead of an obstacle. Which is the next one, reframing your experience as a challenge instead of an obstacle. Another one is normalizing your experience. You know, for 50 years, I thought I was the only one who got dumped by your friend in seventh grade. I mean, I didn't really think about it because I brushed it under the carpet, but if you would have asked me, I was the only one. Well, I found out my younger sister, a year younger than me, had the same experience, and we never talked about it because in our family, you just brushed everything under the carpet. So you normalize it that, you know what? Everybody goes through this. Middle school kids are mean, and they say things that maybe they don't mean, but it has nothing to do with you, and it happens to everybody. And then all of a sudden, you don't feel like, well, there's something fundamentally wrong with me. This is just something, part of being human, getting rejected. Or you might engage in mental time travel. You know, if a two-year-old wants a toy, they want that toy this minute, and that's all they can see. But 5 minutes later, when they have their toy, they don't even want it anymore. And the same thing kind of happens with us. Things that seem like such a big deal right now, tomorrow we won't even remember it. I don't even know what it was about. Do you ever think that? Well, I was so upset yesterday and I don't even know what it was about. So if you can say, what am I going to feel in 5 years? What am I going to feel in 10 years? It puts a little distance between you and it. And when you put the distance there, it turns your prefrontal cortex back on. That's why we're doing the distance, why we're taking the step back, because we don't want to do it from our amygdala. You might journal. I am another person who just doesn't journal. It just doesn't work for me. Maybe because I haven't put the effort in, but it's, you know, there's 10,000 things you can do to be more mindful. You got to do the ones that you're going to do and not worry about the ones that you're just not going to do. And then the other one, which I thought was interesting, is create order in your environment. Part of the reason we have this mental chatter is because we're trying to control what we can't control. But if we control what we can control, it makes us a little bit less anxious. So if you boost your sense of control by cleaning, organizing, making lists, it helps you to be a little less anxious, and then it turns the volume down on your mental chatter. It's like if you're trying to fall asleep and there's something you need to do tomorrow and it keeps going over and over, and you take the time to just write it down and then you can go to sleep. That's the concept. So our minds are really extraordinary. They allow us to survive and thrive. We can choose what we want to do with the thoughts that pop into our head. We can let the negative ones derail us, or we can choose to savor the positive ones. We have the choice. We can look at obstacles as threats or as opportunities. We can be supportive of ourselves, or we can be our own worst critic. Most of us have been creating unhelpful neural pathways, so it's going to take some time to strengthen the good neural pathways while letting the negative ones or the unhelpful ones atrophy. So it's not like I can do this really fast. It's over time, and that's why we call it a life practice, because we have to practice it through our life. And the more we practice it, the more likely we are to stay on course towards our North Star.